I'm Jim Tevin, and welcome to From the Studio, our periodic program that brings you news of the artists and their performances here in the Inland Northwest. And today's special day because we have coming up on this Saturday afternoon at 3 at the Fox Theater in downtown Spokane, a performance by the Spokane String Quartet in their series this year. And I have two members of the quartet who will be playing on Sunday here in the studio with me. One frequent visitor to SPR Classical, Jeanette Wei Yang.
Hello.
And Jeanette is the assistant, I'll get it right one of these days, the assistant principal violist of the orchestra, as well as being violist in the string quartet. So welcome, Jeanette.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Oh, it's our pleasure entirely. And across from me also, a new presence here in the Inland Northwest, the designated assistant principal cellist of the orchestra and guest cellist for this performance with the quartet, and that is Calvin Kung. Good morning, Calvin.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It's a delight to welcome you here, and I think we'll focus on you for just a second before
Sure.
we get into the program. And it's a question that I like to ask every artist the first time they come in. What is your backstory with your instrument? I mean, were you playing a half-sized cello at age 4, or what? How did it work for you?
Yeah. If you want me to answer specifically about the one I have right now, the cello I have right now, or just in cello in general?
Cello in general.
Okay.
Yeah, how you met.
So I began playing cello at the age of 7. Prior to that, I was on piano for just 1 year before that. And I started because my sister played piano and violin, and my mom played piano for, I guess, up until college or so, and she's from Taiwan. So she played back there. So there's always been a musical influence in my family in that sense. I grew up listening to a lot of music, and I did a lot of youth orchestra growing up, chamber music and whatnot. So I've always been surrounded by music. And so I played, 19 years ago, actually. And so moving on forward that, my most recent cello has been acquired actually on the day I won the assistant principal position here, which I thought was very symbolic. But that's it's a Italian, old Italian instrument dating all the way back to 1854. And what's cool about it is that it is an unknown Italian. We have no idea what the maker is. And this is something that I have never experienced before, because growing up, I've always had cellos that were much more bright, much more, I guess, very student-oriented, very, very good. But this acquisition in last year, I've been playing on it for 3 years prior to that, because my friend let me borrow it. And it's a very, very special cello and instrument to me, just because I think I grew the most in my career and personally with it the entire time. And I felt like I learned so much just from playing it and being with essentially a piece of history. And for someone like me who's still learning and growing with the music industry, it is a treat to be able to play on something of that sort. You learn so much about nuance, about personality and music through it.
Is there a date on the cello at all?
I think so. The year 1854 was only known because my friend who owned it previously did a dendrochronology test on it. However, we have not had the means to be able to get it professionally identified by anyone. So there was unknown maker and unknown date to it in that sense.
All right. Yeah. But is it an instrument that the first time you played it, you went, ah?
Absolutely. I remember this was back in March of 2024. And up until this point, I've messed around with so many instruments. But what drew me to this one in particular was the kind of deep scruffiness, oddly enough. It was something that had a lot of richness to it, in particular the D string. There's something so mellow yet soloistic about it. And I felt like I could really carve into the instrument. And that's something that I've been looking for, because for me, doing such a thing, carving sounds out of an instrument is what's going to be the kind of translation from my brain and my emotions to the cello. Mm-hmm. And being able to do all of that into an instrument is what I've been looking for so long. Up until then, I've felt like I've been limited by what I've been playing on. And achieving that extra layer of depth is what unlocked a whole nother world of musical ideas and nuances for me.
It is amazing. To have the right instrument will just Absolutely. Help you do launch and do the most that you possibly can. You are currently between degrees, if that's a way to put it.
Correct.
You have your undergraduate work was at UCLA.
That's right.
And then you did a master's at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. Mm-hmm. And you're doing some postgrad work there and hoping next fall to begin your doctoral studies.
Yeah.
Not sure where yet.
That's right.
But, through this process, was there a moment or was it just something that was in the back of your mind always that this is what I want to do with my life?
Yeah. So I've always loved playing cello, but to turn to teaching was actually an incident that happened in my sophomore year of undergrad. So I was at UCLA studying with Antonio Lisi, and as my freshman year, I took a lot of time to think and just experience life, just in a completely different city. For a myriad of reasons, I felt a little bit disconnected with playing the instrument. I'm sure many musicians can attest to that kind of sensation of kind of falling in and out of love with your instrument mm-hmm. at times. And that was one of the period where I was falling a bit out of it. And I spoke to my teacher at that point. I brought my concerns up to him. And we sat in a staff lounge and everything of that sort, got me a sparkling water and said, "Calvin, so what's going on?" I told him all my concerns and thought about potentially turning away or just moving to another subject to study. And I did not expect this answer from him, but he said, "I will support you no matter what you do. I'm not going to force you to do cello. I will support you in whatever path you decide to go down." And for me, I was already anticipating him telling me to stay, trying to convince me to stay in the music industry. But for a mentor like him to tell me that you have my unlimited support forever, essentially, that gave me the freedom to make a choice, really. Mm-hmm. And I knew the choice was always in front of me. I just needed someone to tell me that. But he was the person who guided me that way. And from then on, I really admire him in that sense. And it's been a goal for me to be someone like that for someone else, to give them unrelenting support in all facets of their life. And I think ever since then, I've been trying to be more of a positive mentor towards all my peers at school, always trying to guide them in a way that I thought was correct and in a way that Antonio taught me, which was just always support them no matter what, always give them the comfort, always give them motivation. And I think being someone like that nowadays is very, very important because there's always so much stress and anxiety surrounding school, surrounding music and studying music. So being someone of that sort would be, you know, the primary goal for me, really. Mm-hmm. And that's a driving force behind why I want to be a teacher one day.
All right. Yeah. Good for you. One more question before we dig into the repertoire that's happening this weekend at the Fox. And that was, how's your experience been with the orchestra so far?
It has been absolutely amazing. Even from the day that I stepped foot for my audition, meeting all the people who are working it, sight reading with a bunch of the current members, I had an absolute blast. I think I felt very, very welcome from the get-go. Everyone was very warm and receiving to me. And once I started playing here at the top of the season, I've heard rumors of Spokane Symphony being one of the nicest and friendliest symphonies out there, and it is absolutely true. And through my experience of interacting with people, everyone was just wanting to get to know you. Everyone was wanting to talk to you and give you a warm welcome, especially in the cello section. I felt very much at ease the entire time. I didn't feel like I had to be a certain person. So the environment that I was in allowed me to just be completely myself. I felt very integrated right away. And it's truly just been a treasure to be able to be here and play with these people. And it's something that I will hold very close to me just because right now this is the best playing experience I've had outside of school. And it is my first, really, true big experience. And so for me, that I've just been soaking in all of that.
All
and
right.
There's nothing else to be said but that it's been a wonderful experience to be here.
Well, it's great to have you with us here today. I'm talking with Calvin Kung, cellist, and Jeanette Wiyang, violist, playing with the Spokane String Quartet this weekend at the Fox Theater. And time to give it over to Jeanette. And how long ago did you all begin working on this program as far as designing it, setting it up?
Oh, we decided on this program sometime last spring, maybe towards early summer. And one of the recommendations for the Montero Quartet for Buenos Aires came from Meredith Arxey, who's a violinist subbing with the Spokane Symphony.
And she's also a wonderful teacher.
Yes, she retired from WSU as the violin professor, violin and viola.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, incredible pedagogy. So we were just having conversation about 3 years ago because I was telling her that I was going to Buenos Aires, Argentina. And she recommended this quartet that she plays with her quartet in the summer. She goes to New York or something to play quartets every summer. We were talking about the piece, and it was interesting because Claudio Montero passed away from breast cancer, and both Meredith and I are breast cancer survivors, so that was just an interesting connection. But I wanted to talk about just going to Buenos Aires and going to the Piazzolla Theater and watching a tango show there, having a tango lesson, and it was really neat because it was during a time where the dollar was king in Argentina because their money was going
not
down.
Not much. And,
yeah,
and
just going down like crazy. Yeah. So they wanted American dollars. And so we paid in American dollars for less because they wanted American dollars. Mm. And we could go to this show for dinner show for very little. So it was great. And we also walked around the streets. The second movement's called Caminito, which reminisces the cobbled streets of Buenos Aires. And so it's just neat because it's firsthand experience with all the movements that Montero wrote in reminiscence of Buenos Aires. She actually was missing it very much because she had moved to Spain towards the second half of her life. And she greatly missed Buenos Aires and Argentina in general. So this piece kind of brought back memories and happiness and the joy of, you know, the tango. Like in the last movement, it's the pulse of the tango goes throughout. It's high energy, rhythmic integrity there. So
I was amazed to read up a little bit on Claudia Montero, who is a brand new name for me. And she lived from 1962 until her premature death, as you mentioned, in 2021. And she is a very accomplished composer who really writes across musical genres. She has orchestral pieces. She has choral pieces. She has chamber pieces and solo piano pieces to her credit. And it's amazing. You can learn about the world of music, but even if you spend a lifetime at it, you just have begun to scratch the surface of all there is out there.
Yes, she also won 4 Latin Grammy Awards for all her works during her career. So
right.
She's definitely great.
I think what I'd like to do is to sample just a little bit of the music of Claudia Montero. This is a piece of hers for harp and string orchestra called Mágica y Misteriosa. So magic and mystery. Let's listen to just a bit of that. We've heard music of Claudia Montero, played by string orchestra. Our harp soloist is Lesmalen Cardoso. And that composer, Claudia Montero, is represented on the Spokane String Quartet program this weekend at the Fox Theater. I'm talking with quartet violist Jeanette Wei-Yang and special guest artist, the cellist Calvin Kung, here in our studio. And we've heard a little bit of the music of Montero. Let's move on to the other pieces on the program.
Yes. The reason why we chose Tchaikovsky Second Quartet is that for some reason we've never played it before, which is quite rare for Tchaikovsky. That's a major quartet, major performance. So we definitely had to play it, perform it this Sunday. It's interesting because Tchaikovsky thought this quartet was, in quotes, "I consider it my best work. No other piece has flowed out of me so easily and simply." When he wrote a letter to his brother, this is what he said. So he thought this work was his best work so far. And
it's from fairly early in his life and career.
But he was already the professor at the Moscow Conservatory. He wasn't a student like the first quartet. So that's kind of a big thing. The other thing is he said that he wanted to make the quartet sound like a full orchestra, which is a new idea. So I think both quartets that were playing, the Tchaikovsky and the Beethoven, were very revolutionary for their time. And they both have this Russian connection, because obviously Tchaikovsky was Russian and Beethoven was basically, he dedicated his quartet to Razumovsky, who was a Russian prince who basically commissioned the composition of the Razumovsky quartets. So it's interesting that both quartets push the envelope. In fact, the first violinist of the quartet that premiered the Opus 59 number 1, the Chapin-Zig quartet, said, "Surely you do not consider this music." And then Beethoven responded, "They are not for you, but for a later age." So in both cases, the quartets both pushed the envelope as far as compositional style, and it was definitely not normal for that time when they were composed.
Right. Well, the Beethoven, of course, comes from right in the middle of his career, and it was a time of great change and just really fascinating stuff in these Razumovsky quartets. Calvin, have you played either of these quartets before?
I have not played a Tchaikovsky. As Jenna mentioned, it is something that I think many people do not actually play. Most people perform the first string quartet more often.
Mm-hmm.
And the Beethoven, I have played snippets of it. Like I said, I grew up playing chamber music, and I've read it a bunch as a kid, but this is the first time actually playing the whole thing through. But I am familiar with just the context and also just the piece itself.
We actually chose this Beethoven quartet because we knew we were playing with Calvin. And it's interesting to know that their first two movements both start with cello solos.
Yes,
or with
that is
the
right.
Cellist. So there are a lot of cello solos in this piece. So it features Calvin very well.
All right, very good. Well, the program is coming up this Sunday afternoon at the Fox Theater in downtown Spokane. The last question actually goes to you, Calvin, as the one who has come from the outside, mm-hmm. and who is experiencing these things for the first time. How do you find the Fox as a space to play in?
It is a very striking hall, in my opinion. The architecture and just simply the beauty of it is phenomenal. In terms of acoustics, it was funny. In my audition, I sat really close to the edge of the stage, and I was facing directly in the middle. I could hear myself very well, but however, I can also hear the space of the hall. And I found that very comforting in my audition because not every single space is like that. There are times when it's extremely dry, in an orchestral practice room in a bigger hall. And sometimes in a big, big hall, it's too wet. And so for me, playing in this hall was quite comfortable. And when on stage with an orchestra, sometimes in my experience sitting on the inside, I often get swallowed up by everything else that's surrounding me. But funnily enough, I'm able to hear myself quite well for whatever reason, either that be an acoustic thing. But I think it's just been a very easy space to play in. And it's very comfortable, like I said. And I have no complaints about playing in it ever. So if every time I can play here, I am bathing in it.
Well put, and a nice way to finish. If you want more information about the program and the players and also how to get tickets, et cetera, go to SpokaneStringQuartet.org and you will have more than enough information to guide you. And so Jeanette and Calvin, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
All right. To go out, we are going to anticipate the performance just a little bit. And Jeanette was mentioning about the Russian influence on the Beethoven string quartets through the dedicate. So we're going to give you a sneak preview here. This is the concluding movement of the string quartet number 7 in F major by Beethoven. And it's called the Russian theme. And he's going to be played for us here by the Ariel Quartet. Thank you.